Thank you all for coming this morning on this beautiful summer day. I know it's difficult to get out on a Sunday morning when there's so much to do outside, and I thank you for coming today. The summertime here, we kind of take a break, take things a little easy, and sometimes it's difficult to get people to come in and speak, so that's why I'm here today, too. Try to fill the docket, but, you know, it's just, it's kind of hard sometimes. So I've been aware of this sermon for quite a while, this was written by Reverend Todd Eckloff from Louisville, Kentucky, who was here a couple months ago. So I called him and I asked him if I could do this, and he said, absolutely. And anything that he writes, he said, he puts out there, and is happy for anybody to do it. So I hope you enjoy this, and we'll see how it goes. As Todd said, the impetus of this essay is called To Love Alike, a Unitarian Universalist Mythology, came from Karen Armstrong's latest book, which is called The Great Transformation, regarding ancient Israel's shift from myth to history. Prior to this transition, the peoples of the Middle East patterned their actions after what their stories told them was transpiring in heaven. Thus, stories of warring gods and heavenly battles produced warring peoples and earthly battles. Instead of commemorating a victory achieved in sacred time in the primordial world of myth, the Israelites celebrated a triumph that they believed had taken place in human time in the not-so-distant past. The historical perspective had God acting in human time rather than human actions mimicking events in sacred time. It occurs, however, that it is still our mythological bent that drives us. Even though we look backward through the eyes of history, of the divine acting in human affairs, that is to say, we don't really care about historical facts. All that matters is our story and what we can spin the record to fit our mythological needs. As the quote that I put in the top of the order of service says, Reinhold Niebuhr said, myth is not history, it's truer than history. Nowadays, it's commonly said, for example, that the United States was founded as a Christian nation, despite all the ample evidence proving just the opposite. George Washington never professed to be a Christian in all of his writings. He favored universalism, the belief that there was no hell, and did not call for a clergyman when he was dying on his deathbed. John Adams, who was a Unitarian, said, "This would be the best of all possible worlds if there were no religion in it." Ratified the Treaty of Tripoli, stating the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. Although I think he later backtracked on that a little bit. Thomas Jefferson thought Christianity was based on Plato, not Jesus, and went so far as to write, "The doctrines which flowed from the lips of Jesus himself are within the comprehension of a child, but thousands of volumes have not yet explained the Platonisms that are engrafted on them. And for this obvious reason, that nonsense can never be explained." James Madison wrote, "Religious bondage shackles and debilitates the mind and unfits it for every noble enterprise." Ethan Allen did not dispute being called a deist, being conscious in his words that "I am no Christian." Finally, Thomas Paine said regarding religions, "I disbelieve them all." Yet given the widely held myth that the United States was founded as a Christian nation, usually makes these facts moot in the minds of those choosing story over history. For it is not our history that matters, but our mythologies. It is with this in mind, rather than presenting a Unitarian Universalist history lesson filled with dates and facts, here we offer instead the beginnings of what might be called a Unitarian Universalist mythology. The purpose is simple. Rather than concentrating on the UU movement through time, we shall endeavor to consider how our movement might transcend history by reflecting and influencing sacred mythological time. In the beginning was harmony. She contained all things, and through her all things came into being and are sustained. Without her, nothing that exists may flourish or have everlasting life. She is the union of soil, water, air, and light that grows our gardens. She is the gravitational force that holds the stars and planets in place. She is the hungry lion culling the weakest and the sickest from the herd. She is a bee pollinating a flower. She is Einstein's quantum field and what the scientists call homeostasis. Prophets call her equality and justice. Priests call her compassion and mercy. Philosophers call her wisdom and truth. Artists call her beauty and balance. Composers call her music and dance. Nations call her peace and fairness. Economists call her the just distribution of wealth. And people call her friendship and love. There is nothing sustained without harmony. One nearsighted creature has somehow forgotten its place among the stars, and through its own arrogance has brought imbalance and disorder to the entire world, seeking to fashion its own creation. With a few bits and pieces, it has fouled the air, the water, and the soil, wrought war, hunger, poverty, disease, discrimination, tyranny, fear, suffering, and all manner of injustice and disharmony. Yet on occasion, from among these tragic creatures, as marvelous and magnificent as they are wretched, arise those who shine like a beacon in the night, remembering their integral place among all creatures and all creation. They are called Unitarians, because they understand that all things originate from one source and are related as if they are from one family. And they are called Universalists, because they realize, though nothing is perfect in itself, all things work together perfectly. Jesus, the Nazarene, was among the first of these Unitarian Universalists. Born under the star that never moves 2 eons ago, he sought to restore harmony to his race by teaching compassion for neighbor and the enemy alike, and by including everyone in his circle of love. But the new order, afraid and threatened by all the truest of these teachings, attempted to extinguish his light by having him put to death. Alas, though they succeeded in ending his life, the eternal truth of his bright spirit could not be extinguished and continues to shine to this day. Those who first encountered his spirit hoped to share his good news with others, just as he had, but dark forces feared their Unitarian Universalist light and quickly moved to have them silenced. Still, the light of this truth radiated all the more, and many who had seen only shadows against the wall had their eyes open for the first time. Among these was Origen, a first father who called God all in all, and taught that none can therefore be excluded from divine love. But the forces of darkness, promoting fear of damnation to maintain their control of others, banished Origen from their world. Remaining unable to fully extinguish the light, however, the desperate powers that be decided to steal it for themselves, that they might hide it under a bushel and distort its emanation as much as possible. Arius, the truth teller, emerged to challenge these lies by openly speaking of Jesus' humanitarian teachings. But the powers hiding the light from the world had already counted themselves that its authority and described it to others to best suit their own interests. They found the more they elevated its human source rather than shining the light itself, the more easily they were able to manipulate others. Realizing the force of such a lie, the Emperor Constantine established it as the official truth and made Arius's teaching about Jesus' humanity illegal. And a great darkness covered the world, during which the illiterate were encouraged and the people were forbidden their own thoughts. But at the end of a millennium, the silence of the Dark Age was broken by the inquisitive Spaniard, Michael Servetus, who proclaimed, "You can see no difference between Christ and others, since we are all called children of God." Thus, like Arius before him, he concluded, "God will be all in all." But other reformers who may have agreed with the Spaniard regard for the Pope as the vilest of all beasts, most brazen of harlots, nevertheless did not wish to free the light, but to enslave it for their own purposes. Among these was John Calvin, who declared Servetus a heretic and hunted him for many years until he was captured, tried, and condemned to be bound and taken to chapel They are attached to a stake and burned with his book to ashes. Still, the primordial light of Unitarian Universalism could not be extinguished, and this cruel martyrdom served only to further its purpose by awakening the compassion of the human heart. One brave soul, Sebastian Castillo, offered his sympathetic voice in protest. "We are all heretics in the eyes of those who do not share our views. Let us be tolerant towards one another, and let no one condemn another's belief. Indeed, no matter how much the powers try to hide the light of harmony, the light of unity and tolerance, the more difficult it was to contain. And this great light, no longer radiated from a lone seer here and there, now and again, but by multitudes who had come to witness it. The Servetian plague, as the powers called it, had spread to the Anabaptists, who declared, 'Christ is not God, but man, and there is no hell but the grave.' Faustus Socinus, another light bearer, taught similarly that God is a harmonious whole, not a disharmonious trinity, that Jesus was therefore a human being like others, and that his teachings about the light, not his divinity, must be observed. Many did choose to observe the teachings of the light and formed a new church, with more than 100 communities practicing the principles of harmony among themselves. Sadly, even in mass, these children of the light, like the individuals who had gone before them, were persecuted and exterminated by the powers who sought once more to squelch the light and keep it for themselves. Some who survived fled to Kolosnavar in Transylvania, where once again they began emanating the Unitarian Universalist light of harmony. One among them, Francis David, who once said, 'We need not think alike to love alike,' also declared, 'Whom God enlightened by his spirit must not be silent and must not hide the truth.' But those still living in darkness resisted harmony, and the city on a hill held much turmoil. Disturbed by the disharmony that had besieged his land, the good King John Sigismund, as early as 1568, issued the first act of religious tolerance and freedom of conscience ever to well up from humanity. 'In every place the preacher shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well, if not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied. But they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. Therefore, none of the superintendents or others shall abuse the preachers. No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone, according to previous statutes. And it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment or by removal from his post for his teaching. For faith is the gift of God.' After this decree, for the first time, those teachings, the light of harmony, became welcome among us. And King Sigismund, the first leader who did not wish to hoard the light for himself, but upon his untimely death, the powers of darkness swarmed the kingdom, outlawed harmony, and put the court's preacher, Francis David, on trial, where he was condemned to life imprisonment, during soon which he died. Still, the light of harmony could not be extinguished. Though often restricted and persecuted, the Unitarians continued spreading their light for all to see. With their homes, their schools, their churches, and their assets seized, and their numbers greatly reduced, they stayed their course and eventually spread from their Transylvanian haven around the world. Even as the Unitarian light shined on Europe, the light of Universalism, that God loves everyone, found a home in the New World. The movement's father, John Murray, arrived shortly after humanity's great democratic experiment started and began preaching his gospel of universal grace, teaching that all people must be tolerated and included in God's love. The powers of darkness followed him, calling him a false teacher, but Murray boldly responded, 'Not all the stones in Boston, except they stop my breath, shall shut my mouth.' His followers soon erected the Independent Church of Christ, the first universalist church in America, made up of 61 men and women who had converted to the light from their Calvinistic first church parish. They even grew brazen enough to stop paying taxes to their old church. In retaliation, the powers, just as they had done in the old world, began persecuting the Universalists by seizing their property and assets. But as the Universalists responded with a lawsuit which they won, ending public support of churches and striking a major blow for religious freedom and separation of church and state. Love for the light of harmony comes so natural that within 100 years there were nearly 1,000 congregations in the New World, claiming to influence more than 600,000 members. Ever since, these unique children of the light have shined before the world, helping all to better understand the way of harmony, this magnificent light in a variety of ways. In refusing the authority of the powers, they chose to democratically govern themselves and to determine for themselves who their leaders and who their ministers would be. They remained committed to religious freedom and fought for separation of church and state by helping to establish sectarian education for all ages. In 1840, they held a convention declaring slavery as contrary to the plainest dictates of natural justice and Christian love, and to that doctrine of universal grace and love which we cherish as the most important of revealed truth. Committed to justice and tolerance at many levels, the Children of Light also worked to establish women's rights, both in their churches and society at large. During the Civil War, it was Clara Barton, a daughter of the Light, from the Universalist family in North Oxford, Massachusetts, who, with other angels of the battlefield, founded the American Red Cross. By 1863, even before the war ended, these grand Universalists became the first religious denomination to officially ordain a woman, Olympia Brown, as a minister. In 1889, the Universalists also ordained Joseph Jordan, its first African-American minister. Since all are member of one human family and worthy of God's love, these extraordinary children of the light were also the first to begin advocating for the better treatment of prisoners and abolish the death penalty. Great Unitarian poet philosophers like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, further challenged the Children of Light to become even more inclusive by transcending their restrictive religious language and ideas. And the Universalist Aidan Ballou advocated nonviolence in his book, Christian Non-Resistance, which influenced Leo Tolstoy, who influenced Gandhi, who influenced Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. As early as 1964, the Unitarian Universalists passed a resolution against the Vietnam War. That same year, Unitarian Universalist minister James Reeb was murdered in Selma, Alabama, advocating civil rights. And 2 years later, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered a lecture before the UUA Assembly, General Assembly. Still attempting to dampen the light, however, the powers of darkness, now in the form of the federal government, began investigating the UUA's bank records in retaliation for its publication of the Pentagon Papers, an investigation the Attorney General himself put an end to. We see from all these examples, the way of harmony has made great strides to restore its link to the human race, especially through its children of the light, who never stop shining, even in the darkest of nights. Their sense of oneness with all beings and their acceptance of others reflects their own divine origins, and in their beauty, restores hope to the world and redeems humanity. May each of us know this light and become its beacon in a troubled world. In our mythologies, we call ourselves the Children of the Light, we Unitarian Universalists. But as we go into the community and do what we can, do our mythologies become true? I think that's up to us to decide now. Do we always remain as Children of the Light?